during the pandemic, we had a crazy amount of financial news that was coming in hot, and a lot of it spurred due to a scene on the website called reddit.com. If you're not familiar with it, it's basically a major informational source, and for any topic in the world, whether exotic birds or things like GameStop. And they were able to really hike the price of that stock up. And with that being said, we realized we all need better financial advice. And where do we get it? Well, we see it on the headlines, but we also get it in the optometric world through a group called ODs on Finance. And today we have Dr. Aaron Neufeld. He's based in the Bay Area, owns a practice, and he's gonna get us up to date on this crypto craze. And we're also gonna cover basics and kind of some economics and wealth building. So welcome to the podcast. Online forms for your EHR, do you have them? Can your patients get a notification before their appointment that they need to fill out their patient information? That includes demographics, medical history, patient questionnaires, and then all that information is funneled right back into your EHR in the correct fields, whether it's OfficeMate, Revolution, Crystal, Liquid EHR, Ifinity, Uprise, you name it. There's a new company out there called OptiExpress, and they specialize in developing custom online forms that sync right back into your EHR in the correct fields. Do you even know how much time your front desk spends typing addresses and birth dates and medical insurance cards into the right fields? Probably 2, 3, 4 hours a day. It's ridiculous. And then if the patient shows up late, the whole exam process is just backflowed throughout the whole day and people are waiting. You need online forms if you want to increase productivity in the office. Plus, patients don't want to sit there 15 minutes before an exam filling things out. They want to do it on their mobile device ahead of time. So, what are you waiting for? Get in touch with OptiExpress. They will custom build it for you. So the process is you send them your current forms, just scan it in, send the PDF, take a picture of it, whatever. They will build the form for you, show you the proof, and then sync it with your EHR with their awesome machine learning technology. This is not too good to be true. You need automation in your practice. Go to the link in the show notes to learn about OptiExpress and how they can help you increase your efficiency within your practice. And they do all the other normal stuff like appointment reminders, online schedulers that sync with your EHR, reputation management. Frankly, they were founded by an OD, and he developed this company out of the frustration of things that he did not have with other systems. Go to the link in the show notes to get more information. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to iTrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Oz. I'm Dr. Raymond Brill with my co-host,
Perry Brill, and we're here to bring you stories about Wizards of Oz. Yes, what is a wizard, Dr. Brill?
Well, these are folks that you may have heard about, may not have heard about. These are people who are actually very successful in doing what they do in all aspects of eye care.
We're not talking to self-proclaimed industry geniuses, experts, masters, or gurus, because we're talking to Wizards of Oz that make it happen each and every day.
They are out there working every day in the labs, on the road, in the practices, in surgery suites, making lenses, making frames.
Yes, we want to hear these back-of-the-house stories about innovation, entrepreneurship, and make you feel excited to do what you do.
We want you to be energized about the whole eye care field. And this is not your big optical program. This is done out of the passion of our hearts.
Please go ahead and subscribe to iTrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Oz on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or your favorite app. Also, visit iTrepreneur.com, where you'll find our latest blogs and special video content. That's www.eytrepreneur.com.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we have Dr. Brill here as well. And I remember as a child, I would wake up and he would be watching all the stock tickers in the morning. What Squawk Box and I don't know what other shows were on in the 90s.
I think Public Television had a financial report at like 10 o'clock at night. And yeah, I was really into it at that time.
Right. Dr. Brill, how did you know you should invest? I mean, your parents were not good financial advisors. How did you know?
Well, you know, you have to study it. And I used to listen to Bob Brinker on Saturday afternoon. I don't know if he's still around there, about different concepts of investing, mutual fund investing, and just different types and different thought processes on it. And fortunately, during the early 90s, mid 90s, you know, you would call, it's called buy on the dips. The market would go down and you bought it. Okay. And with the thought process that it'll never really go like really down. And you bought stocks like Intel and Microsoft and other category killers. So it would be, it was pretty easy actually. And it was kind of fun. You just keep buying stocks. Oh, it dipped, buy more. So until about 1999, when you never thought that stocks that were category killers would go down 90%. And at that point, I think I realized that maybe I better stick to optometry and let the professionals handle that. So it's tumbling because you think you know everything and you have some measure of success over 5 years. And next thing you know, all the stocks that were darlings are down 90%. So,
right. So Dr. Neufeld, give us a, kind of your professional background here. Intro to ODs on finance.
Yeah, definitely. Graduated from Southern College of Optometry out in Memphis, Tennessee. Decided to move back to my home area, the Bay Area, and bought a practice about a year out of school, located in Los Altos, called Los Altos Optometric Group, just a full scope private practice. And started ODs on finance in about 2018, I believe, beginning of 2018. And the reason we started it, actually, the kind of the backstory was when I first got out of school, I was bouncing around various fill-in jobs, kind of what the classic optometrist does out here in a saturated Bay Area, California. And I was working one job with a, I believe he was 82 years old. He was an optometrist that was 82, and we were both working together. This guy could barely get around. I was doing, you know, most of the work, seeing most of the patients. And then at one point I just asked him, I was like, hey, why are you still working at 82? Like, you got to give me the dirt. And he told me that he had no financial education. He didn't save for retirement. He was still working, you know, he was getting the Social Security and all of that, but that wasn't enough in, you know, where we live with the high cost of living. So he was basically living paycheck to paycheck at 82. You know, he factored a divorce in there. He factored just living by, you know, living above your means in there. And that was what happened. And so that kind of struck me because at that point I had not really been investing. I was just kind of living the new doctor life, just enjoying, you know, the newfound money that you didn't have for the past 8 years. And it was around that time that I was talking with Dad, our other co-founder, Dr. Bowie, and we're like, hey, you know, we never really learned about this in school. This makes sense. This is why this happened, because there's just not that education. So we started a little Facebook group, called it ODs on Finance. Really, the point of it was just to have conversations about finance, just to kind of have this open forum, because we felt like it was kind of a taboo subject, especially in, you know, the medical fields, optometry field. It just, it's tough to talk about finances. Everyone kind of keeps to themselves about it. And so the group was basically just open. Hey, post whatever you want. We'll make it anonymous. If you don't want your name on it, we'll just post it on your behalf. And it grew pretty quickly. We just thought there'd be a couple hundred people in it. And now there's, yeah, 11,500 in it. And about a year and a half ago, we decided to launch a website just to kind of host all our resources. And then it just kept growing from there. You know, people wanted vetted financial professionals. So we started going out and vetting people and, you know, recommending those individuals. Wrote a book about the whole thing, put it on Amazon. And yeah, just a lot of different resources now that we're constantly producing. We're realizing there is actually a need for this as the group continues to grow and the website continues to grow.
If you want to join the ODs on Finance group or buy the book, we'll put the link in the show notes. And what are some of the topics, like, three topics, for example, that you guys frequently discuss in the group?
Yeah, you know, historically, student loan debt has been probably the biggest one. That was kind of the driver behind it. It's like different ways to pay off your debt, get out of debt so you can start building your net worth in a positive way rather than a negative way. Number two, definitely investing and just how do you invest? What is an investment? All of that good stuff. And then number three, kind of going along with that, is retirement. You know, how do we plan for retirement? How do we plan to be successful so that we don't have to work when we're 85, different things. Those are probably the big three, but probably the newest one that's happening right now is just all the craze that's going on in the stock market world, now in the crypto world as well. Just, you know, that's been the constant discussion point, and for a good reason, it's all over the media.
Okay, so you mentioned the word crypto. I think we'll start off kind of in the new era of financial advice, and then we'll kind of go back to the more standardized stuff. So what is cryptocurrency? It's unregulated, right? There's no central bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a digital asset. So how I like to look at it is we've kind of had like four evolutions of our currency. You know, first was the barter system. I give you three of my chickens for one of your cows or something like that. And then we kind of evolved to the precious metal standard where we had gold and silver. And then as we became more developed, we obviously have our fiat currency, which is basically how we do everything nowadays. And then, yeah, crypto is kind of that next, we can almost look at it as that next stage. And yeah, it's a digital asset. It's decentralized. So it's, you can't regulate it, but decentralization also helps in that the public basically is constantly looking at this. So there's no way to cheat around it. So the system works, and it does that through blockchain. It does that through cryptography. And, you know, I'm not an expert on this stuff, so I'm not going to try to explain the science behind it, programming. But from what we see, you know, it works, and it's just a new way of kind of skirting around the old fiat currency. And especially with the current kind of outlook on the dollar, you know, and just currency in general, where people are losing faith, they're losing confidence in the fiat that we have right now. That's why we're seeing more of this crypto come on the scene.
Yeah, what I kind of understand is, let's say you're making $60,000 a year and you get a raise. Now you're making $70,000 a year. Your money is, that dollar is just not worth as much. Even though you got a raise, it's not really that much more money because there's inflation. And then countries like Venezuela, where the dollar has just tanked, right? So, you know, perhaps if it was not a government-run currency, if there was more of the unregulated currency like a crypto, maybe the Venezuelans would have not been in the situation they've been in. But
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because yeah, once again, you're looking at something that's decentralized, something that anyone in the world can technically purchase and have and use. At this point, we're still wondering, you know, that's the big question is, can we start to use these cryptocurrencies for actual exchanges? That's going to be the big gap. And if we can leap over that, then we're going to see mass adoption. And that's why we're in that kind of volatile stage right now, at least from my opinion, is that we just don't know what's going to work. There's millions of different coins and tokens out there. People are buying, you know, some of each. And really what's fueling these prices to go up and down so wildly is speculation. It's purely speculation. It's, you know, like, I think this coin's going to be valuable in the future, or I'm just buying a bunch of it to, you know, make it scarce so that it pumps up in value, and then I'm going to sell it at the end. You know, there's different ways of going about that.
Okay. Now, how do you buy, let's say, a Bitcoin or a Dogecoin? There's an app, you can download an app, you can go to a website, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a variety of ways. Coinbase just went public, and that's probably the biggest broker of cryptocurrency. And then Gemini is another one. I know Binance is another one. And I think they also, yeah, someone's telling me there's crypto ATMs as well, which, you know, instead of putting cash in that thing, you're just pulling out crypto of it. So it's coming along. It's becoming easier and easier to acquire. I remember when it first came on the scene, you know, close to 10 years ago, it was just, you had to go through so many different steps to get it. And everyone's wondering, what are you doing? What are you spending your money on? But now it's pretty commonplace. There's apps for it.
Yeah.
And you got a long number that you have to remember.
So there's different ways of storing it. You can store it on a digital wallet, or you can just store it on your actual account. And then, yeah, there's ways to protect it as well. So you put your password and you put all these different code words on it. If you're putting it on a ledger, there's a variety of ways of keeping your crypto.
Can you buy it on Schwab or Ameritrade at all?
That's a good question. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure at some point they're going to list it if they don't already list it. But yeah, I don't know that. I know that on I believe Robinhood has a option. You don't actually buy the crypto. You're buying an option on the crypto. So
I see.
But I'm sure that eventually
there's no ETF of crypto.
You know, there are some ETFs, and I believe there are some. I even saw an ad for a Roth IRA fund for crypto, which seems a little risky, but yeah, you can actually buy different ETFs in it. So it's just like anything else out there.
Okay. And it's secure, right? What I understand is it really can't be hacked very easy, or you can't have bad players. Like, I think Wells Fargo was selling bad mortgages for a long time. I think that was it. Just crooked employees doing that, which, you know, really put people in financial turmoil. But with crypto, it's, you have like just thousands and thousands and thousands of security layers, and you have to break every single one, and everybody has to like agree to changes. So it's really impossible.
It's associated with the underworld, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, initially, I mean, it was used for a lot of sketchy transactions, just because once again, you couldn't trace it. It was decentralized. So
they right.
didn't have to launder your money per se. Because it
dark web, hacking, all sorts of dark areas.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of its formative history. But I think nowadays we're seeing an evolution. You know, there's still some people that associate it with that, but there's a lot of different avenues you can take with it now.
Okay. Well, let's get back to basics here. So whether you're, you know, 40 and just now just starting to put some money away and double, triple, quadruple it or whatever, or you're really young, just out of school, and maybe you're like 18. I mean, that's really the best time. Just trickle it $10 a week, right? Why should we invest? Let's just define that.
Yeah. I mean, investing, once again, you got to take the long-term aspect. You got to look at it 20 years from now. Why are you investing? It's to save for the future. It's to save for your future retirement. Or if something goes wrong, you know, you want to have cash if you can't work, or if something happens where life just changes, it's always good to be financially free so you can be prepared for all of that. And investing, you know, there's two important things. The first thing is that there's a time horizon for investing. So being in the game longer is more important than putting a lot of money into it at the end. So you want to start as early as possible, and you want to do it as often as possible. Those are kind of our two mantras when it comes to investing. Just make it automatic, make it part of your life, and start early. That way you're financially free earlier on.
Yeah, the power of compounding is like the eighth wonder of the world.
It is, yeah. Einstein right there.
Define compounding, Dr. Brill.
Well, you have a certain amount of money, and then that generates more money. That when reinvested, it generates more money. It's kind of like a snowball going downhill, you know? And I invested for the kids, you and your brother, in your IRAs. And now it's a pretty substantial amount of money. So even though I haven't put money in it in the last several years, and it was a matter of just starting it earlier, and hopefully, you know, people are smart enough not to touch that money. Do not touch the money. But in general, I've kind of ballparked that if you put money in your 20s or earlier, by the time you are at retirement age, whatever that is, it should amount to about eightfold. So, I mean, if you look at how often it doubles, and Aaron can tell you the formula on that, right? Rule 72, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you know that rule of 72, it makes you think about that. Let's say you have $100,000 right now. That is really a phantom value of maybe $800,000 if you think of it at retirement. So that makes you think, really, what I do now is maybe eight times more important, and especially if you're profiting instead of losing. So there's different vehicles. You know, you have the easiest one is just to fund your IRA. You have got real estate investments. You have different vehicles that have different measures of risk, and you have to balance that risk, although you can be more risky when you're younger.
What is an IRA and how do we fund it? Is that an employer-based thing, or can I just buy it individually and fund it?
You could, there's different types. So you can have your personal IRA that you buy based on a formula that the government gives you that makes it tax exempt. And it will be taxed at some point, but the idea is that when you are older, you will be at a lower tax rate. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but anything you could sock away that's not taxed is better. Then you have employer funded ones like a SEP IRA or a simple IRA that also has a formula of whether it can be matched or not matched. And those are all the things that you want to fund first. Of course, you have to have a reserve, you know, for emergencies, just in case there's something like COVID or some unexpected event or a fire or who knows what, you're sick. You have to have a measure of a reserve. I don't know, what is that, Aaron? Maybe 3 months or 6 months that if you didn't have money. I know when I started my practice cold, being very naive, I said, I have to have enough cash that I wouldn't have to take any cash out of my practice for 2 years. Now, that was a little excessive, but I thought, you can't be like a restaurant, open up, and in 3 months, you're done because you don't have enough cash flow. So
yeah. Yeah, that's super important. Yeah, we recommend 3 to 6 months of expenses just out stocked away. You always got to have that emergency fund.
Yeah. So you have to fund that first, fund your emergency fund. And then I think you have to go in order of risk, you know, you on a basis for your investments. And later on, you can decide how much is, I would call your play money or mad money. You know, if you want to play in Bitcoin, hopefully it's not your first dollars. I mean, it's money you say, well, you know, if I got 50 grand, I lose 50 grand, no big deal. So I go, I kind of, it's somewhat of a gamble. I mean, it's like going to the casino. You can go there for entertainment and say, honey, we'd be going out to dinner and spending $150. So let's go to the casino and spend $150, as long as you don't mind losing $150.
Exactly. So Aaron, you know, when we choose to invest, I think, you know, there's a lot of self-service platforms out there like Robinhood, just an app. You could go to some type of person like Edward Jones, or you could maybe have your uncle, some other individual company, private company. How do we choose who to trust in this initial stages?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And what I advise for, you know, a lot of ODs out there, I mean, if you are interested in this, you can learn it, you can DIY it. A lot of people are doing it these days. That's perfectly fine, but just make sure to educate yourself first before you jump into things. Understand the basics of financing and investing. But looking for an advisor, you know, if you decide, hey, this just isn't for me, this is money stuff's too complicated. Definitely you want to look for someone that's fee only. You don't want someone that's going to make money off of your money. That's one of our things. And that's how all our vetted professionals are.
We'll go through that concept here again, make money off your money. So are you saying they're going to charge some percentage commission based on the money that they earn you?
Yeah. There are various financial advisors and that work off of commissions. And the problem is when you look at it purely from an objective standpoint, you know, they're not working in your best interest. They're working for themselves. They're going to sell you the products that make them the most money. But if you're a flat fee advisor, it doesn't really matter because you're paying them the same regardless. So regardless of their performance. So
if they don't perform well, they still make money though.
That's true.
Money on your, because your fee is based on your assets held. Meaning, let's say you have $1 million. They're going to have a fee for 500,000, for $1 million, for 5 million. And you just pay them a steady percentage and you hope that they do well. Or you have some that it's sneaky. There's front end load fees or back end load fees. That's on mutual funds. So a mutual fund, think of it as a grouping of different stocks that has maybe a certain emphasis or focus. If you had a Edward Jones brokerage, they're going to have their own funds. Sometimes there's funds of funds. But when you have all that, you all have layers and layers of management. And they all have their own fees. So you have to kind of watch out. You know, you go to your bank and they say, well, we work through this company. And this company has managers. And they go to other funds that also have managers. And you can have layers of fees that are exorbitant, but you just don't really notice it. Because some of them are advertising fees called 12B1 fees. So, but then there's no load brokerage firms, right? And with those no loads, they're really just a minimum cost to it, or very negligible cost. But now you're in charge. You're running the train and it could go off the tracks and you have nobody to blame but yourself. But I think optometrists oftentimes are too DIY on everything, websites, finance, you know, painting. I mean, and if you're busy enough, you can actually make more money by devoting yourself to your practice and eventually let somebody else run that who knows a lot more and their computers are faster. So you can make a lot of mistakes yourself too. But
well, let me ask Aaron, how do you audit? Let's say you hire somebody through a referral. They said, hey, this group of men and women are awesome at investing your money. You can hang out with your kids on the weekend. They'll watch all your portfolios. How do we audit they're actually doing a good job?
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, once again, it's definitely that word of mouth. Just like going to your optometrist, how did you initially end up at your optometrist? Probably because someone else told you they did a fantastic job. These glasses work great. They diagnosed my glaucoma. It's the same thing with the financial advisor. You know, you want to ask around. You want to really interview that person first. I mean, you're always going to get a chance to meet with them, see if you're on the same playing field, see if you're on the same level. And yeah, also talking to individuals that have user services and seeing how they feel about that.
Looking for affordable, high-quality eyewear at a $19 wholesale price point that you could sell for $100 or more retail? Well, let me tell you about Vernon Gantry. It's a frame brand developed by two New York City optometrists named Scott and Pauline. And their goal was to help fellow eye care professionals compete in the ever-changing market. The Warbyization, the Zinni.com, everyone's going online to get cheap eyewear, and it's truly cheap and low quality. So what they did is they made their own frame line about 3 years ago now, actually. They eliminated the sales reps, the licensing fees, advertising costs, and employed traditional eyewear companies to manufacture their products. And these are really high quality Chinese production. And I 100% vouch for this brand. No spring hinges, quality acetates, awesome metals. And this actually feels like a brand. You know those other brands, they're the cheapo frame lines you get and kind of like welfare quality or a little above welfare. This completely blows it out of the water. Comes with a nice leatherette folding case. Go to the show notes in the podcast app here. Request a free frame. I will allow you to check it out, feel it, wear it, look at the quality of it. And you will want to bring in 30 pieces of this right away. 30 pieces is probably around $600 or so. And again, you're going to get 5, 6X markup out of these. They come with warranties. They're all new. Great bread and butter styles with even lots of color if you want that. And guess what? Vernon Gantry has kids frames too. Go to the link in the show notes, request that frame, fill out the form, and this will forever change your practice. You can make great package pricing out of these frames. You can use them with insurance. And it's even great for second pairs because sometimes people may buy a $600 pair for the first pair, but the second pair, they just want like $150 frame and lens. And this is perfect for it. This is going to be your highest quality fashionable frame in the $19 price point. It will blow all the other budget companies out of the water. Give it a look.
There are groupings of stocks that on a daily basis, if you watch the news or read Barron's once a week, or you watch the Wall Street Journal, it's a certain grouping of stocks like the Dow. Everybody talks about the Dow. I think it's, 24 stocks, Aaron?
Yeah.
And these are larger stocks. And they talk about the Dow went up this way, the Dow went down. Well, that's this grouping or a basket of 24 stocks that over time has changed. A lot of them have gone out of business that were big companies. Think of it as a basket of stocks and how they reacted to whatever happened in the market. Well, there's a grouping of 500 stocks, and there's larger groupings. And how did they do unmanaged? And so if you don't know what to do, you can say, look, I'm going to put it in a grouping of high-tech stocks, and they might call like QQQ, or there's different names for exchange-traded funds. And so if you have a grouping of these stocks and they're unmanaged, let's say you see, how did they do in the past year? Well, if your investment advisor did not beat that, I mean, they didn't really do any good because you could put it in a no-load mutual fund, no fees on it, or actually a very minimal fee, that did not need management. And if you don't know what to do, you say, well, I'm just going to buy what's called, I'll buy the market. So in the past year, the market went up a lot, like 90%. So, and if you paid your advisor $50,000 to manage your money and they did not beat the market, or if you look over maybe a 10-year time period of their statistics, that's the wrong advisor. Your advisor should be making you money, more money than they're charging you. And you can compare that, their statistics, to the marketplace. And that's one of the first ways that I would do that. And they should be very good if they're beating the market, because it's over time, I think it's been, if you look over 100 years, it's maybe 9 or 10% or so if you're in the market. And you often will, they say if you're out of the market on the sixth of the wrong days in that year, I mean, you could be at a loss. So people that time the market often are fools. I mean, you think you could time the market, whether it's Dogecoin or whatever, but people just really can't time the market well. The best thing over time, and this is different philosophies, is to maybe just keep investing and keep in the market. Although there's different philosophies on that. Some people think you can do trades and be out of the market. So, and just right. And that's the right time. But timing is very difficult because you can't control all the circumstances.
Yeah. And then a lot of people don't realize what timing, you got to get it right twice. I mean, you got to get it right when it's going down and you got to get it right when it's coming up. That's another factor that goes into it. So it's,
I looked at day trading back probably about in the late 90s, and I spent a couple of days at a day trading house, and there was quite popular at that time. If you left your computer to go to lunch or to go to the bathroom, you could be totally lost.
Yeah.
Okay. You could watch all the big trading houses are, you know, what they're doing at any moment. And the average person did about 25 trades a day. But at that time, trades would be $50 to $60, $75. So if you just add up how much the trade cost was, now all the trades are either no money or very little money, depending on what's called order flow. But it was very nerve-wracking. And those people probably all became mentally ill because of the stress. I mean, just think, you can't eat, you can't go to the bathroom, because you would be, if you're off by a fraction of a second, you lose. And oftentimes their computers are much faster connection. And we're talking hundreds of seconds where you just can't beat them.
So Aaron, as we kind of learn to invest as beginners here, is it best for us to say, look, I'm going to pick five stocks. I like these companies. You know, I like Apple. I love their products. Or I like LG. You know, they have great TVs. Should we choose companies that we like to invest in initially, or just do we need to like pick the best ones, even though I don't care about like L'Oreal makeup or something, you know?
You know, that's a good question. That's an individual stock question. And for the majority of people out there, you know, it's just what your dad said right now. Just look at the S&P 500. There's an index fund for that. There's a total stock market index fund. That's going to be the safest way. And that's the tried and true method. You know, you just put money in there, just dollar cost average, meaning every couple of weeks or every month or whatever, just put a set amount in there so it continues to grow. That's just the safest thing. I just have to get that out there because that's, you know, that's the basic philosophy.
It's boring, but it works over time.
But if you do want to pick individual stocks, you know, I think that's perfectly fine as well. I think that can make for a good investing strategy. My big thing is just do your due diligence. You know, learn how a stock works. Learn how the numbers go up and down. There's a lot of different things that go into it. Try to read a financial report. I think that's a really big eye-opener. I remember when I think Apple's financial report was the first one I ever read. And just try to learn about the company. I mean, you're putting thousands of dollars into this company. You should probably know a few things about it. You know, don't just...
How do we access those? Is that... Can we Google that? Is it private?
That's all public information. You can find it. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a public company.
Yeah. Yeah. They're public companies. So you can find all of that. And then, yeah, just looking at different things too. Just even looking at how a CEO treats his employees. There's a lot of different aspects that go into it. And really, I mean, I wouldn't personally pick something that I had no interest in, because it would just be tough for me to do the research with any sort of passion. But
you know, interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting to look up the online glasses companies and how they lose 90 or 100 million a year. And we think, God, they're just killing us. How do they do this for $7? You know, I mean, they're making glasses, they got the frame, they got the shipping, and they're doing it for $7. And when you actually look at, yeah, they lost 100 million last year, 120 million. So we can't afford to lose money every day. We just go out of business.
Yeah, we don't. Amazon did not, you know, hundreds of investors.
Amazon did not make money for many years. But they had enough people, enough investors that they outlasted everyone else. But if you're looking at online glasses companies, I mean, there's hundreds of them. And most of them will lose money and just go away and you won't even know about it. So you have to feel good about that when you say, you know, I didn't lose any money. So maybe we were slow, but these companies that advertise a lot of times they're not making any money at all. And for years. So
one of the topics I want to get into is IPOs. I think during the pandemic, there was quite a few. Bumble was like, what, a month or two ago? Is Peloton public?
Peloton, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So should we be going after IPOs? And what is an IPO, by the way? So it's initial public offering, but what does that mean?
Yeah, the initial public offering. So that's when a company first decides to go public. So that's where individuals like us can start to buy stock in these companies. And IPOs are interesting because we've had a total craze this last couple of years. I mean, I think we've had a record for how many companies have decided to IPO. And part of that is just the consumer, the basic consumer is starting to buy more stocks. That's just the trend we've noticed. That's why the stuff is on the news all the time. And that's why these companies are more prone to go public, because they got more people that want to buy the stock that's going to raise stock price. So it all makes sense. I don't know if you followed any of these IPOs, like the Airbnb one or the DoorDash one. They're volatile. They're crazy. They just go up like crazy. They drop down like crazy. I remember I was watching the Lemonade. That was a big one in the Odies on Finance group. And that one.
Who was it?
Lemonade. It's an insurance company, but
okay.
It went up to like, I believe, $150 a share, tanked to like 60 in like a day. So it's just massive volatility swing.
It's hard to get in on an IPO. I mean, you have to be a serious investor with a lot of money in the marketplace. You can't say, hey, I'll call your broker and say, I want to get in on an IPO. I want like two shares. I mean, they're That's not going to happen most likely unless you're a real favored investor and you have hundreds of millions of dollars. And most people that buy an IPO, by the end of it, if they could sell it, if they could buy it that day and sell it at the end of the day, they may make some money. But a lot of times there's so much energy in it. It's like a rocket and then it goes down like nothing. So fun and exciting, but do that with your mad money.
Yeah, do it with your mad money. And if you really want to get into one of these new companies, you know, just wait the 45 days, wait for it to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
The initial trading, everyone's, you know, been throwing it back and forth. So
unless you're a trader, unless you say, I'm going to be trading that thing five times a day, but they often have rules, you know, on the IPO. You, if you're getting on the IPO, you can't be selling that for a certain period of time.
So a topic I want to get to is really the financial wealth building of staff within our practices, because, okay, yes, every doctor is making six figures. That's a given. Staff are going to generally make anywhere from, let's say, $30,000 to $60,000 a year. And, you know, that salary is not going to allow you to retire. You'll be working for a while, we'll say. And, you know, you're not going to have luxury vacations to France on those incomes. But just even with that amount of income, you could still become a wealthy individual by doing the things Dr. Brill said here, you know, IRAs and 401ks, and by putting money in the stock market. So someone in that income bracket, how should they play with their money?
Yeah, you know, that once again, it kind of goes back to the fundamentals, the basics. Establish a budget. I don't think we talked about that yet, but that should be number one. Establish the budget. That's how much money you're going to be putting into these investments in the first place.
Okay. What's the rule of thumb usually for budgeting for this?
Well, I would say pay yourself first. Okay. So assume you do not have that money. Okay. So if your check every week is, let's say, $800, just assume that maybe you only have $700. Okay, so now you paid yourself first, and there's ways to have that automatically invested, kind of like taxes are taken out. You just take it out, set it up where it's automatically invested. You don't even see the money.
Right, right. It's ACH back into in whatever you're investing into, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Raymond got ahead of it. That was going to be number two.
Sorry.
You know, okay. But no, it's important to automate it. Because that's, and then the psychological factor comes in. If you've automated it, if it's already just directly going into your 401k, you never touch it because you never had the chance to touch it. So it's important as well. Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, you can devise a plan and when you actually come to executing it, I want to use this money instead of investing. You create a problem. So
you need to find out what your allocation is, you know, what you feel comfortable. So let's say you're young, you were talking about young people, you may be good with 80% stocks and maybe 100% stocks, because if they go down, yeah, it's more market risk. You don't have to balance that risk. But as you get older, you may say, well, if the market goes down, I don't want to lose all my money. I'm going to do it with things that are safer, like maybe some bond investments where it's a fixed income or a fixed income stock, where that company, it's boring. It's General Electric, which is its own mutual fund in itself. It's boring, but it pays a stock dividend, maybe 8%. And you say, like, 8%? I can't get that in any bank. You know, and yeah, it's really boring. It's not going to be volatile, but that's what you want when the market's volatile. You don't want volatility in all of your portfolio. You have to determine where your allocation for different assets is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, when you're younger, you can be a risk taker. I mean, bigger risk, bigger rewards. But yeah, when you get up there, when you're nearing retirement, you don't want that volatility because you don't want to one day have half the money that you had yesterday.
I want to get back into the discussion about ODs on finance. I snoop around in there daily basis. You know, I think this morning someone had a funny one of, it said Elon and a middle finger.
Yeah, we'll get to that this morning.
It literally had a middle finger emoji and Elon.
It's probably because it's Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I watched it for about 15 minutes and then I was like, I'm going to bed.
Yeah, I did not see it.
Elon is, you know, there's always somebody who's a genius in the marketplace, and he just has better ideas. He has concepts that nobody else is thinking about. And he's willing to take a lot of risk, but he has a lot of money too.
Yeah. He
has some of your money, Perry. He's got some of my money. So
yeah.
Got some of mine too. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know.
And he bought a ton of Bitcoin too. The company did. So Aaron, you, back to ODs on finance, you have like a massive array of tools that you guys offer, and you vetted people. I mean, one of those individuals I use actually for accounting, taxes, and bookkeeping. What's his name?
Jose
Diaz Caro. Yeah. Oh yeah. I use Jose Caro Diaz for accounting and bookkeeping, and I don't have to think about it. He has me organized. He makes me send receipts in to him. He has an assistant, Steven, who keeps me on track. And so I think that's one of the big tools I found is it's really hard to find qualified individuals to deal with. You know, things like Angie's List and things existed out there for like home services, you know, but it's like you've compiled like the top 20 financial services for optometry and anybody in kind of this healthcare. So talk about that.
Yeah. That was definitely a process. It took a lot of time, took a lot of dad's time, to be honest. He did a lot of the interviewing, but yeah, what we would do is we would initially get a recommendation either from a member or from one of the professionals we already had. And if that person was interested, we would kind of contact them, talk to them, ask them a few basic questions about, you know, just kind of meeting basic standards. And then we'd meet with them for about an hour interview. And just our main thing was to make sure there was a trust, you know, that this was someone we could trust and someone that played by the fundamentals, someone that wasn't going to throw anyone under the bus or, you know, just take their money and run away. And so these are the individuals that on our website that we have found to be the most trustworthy and just kind of the best in the business. We've probably interviewed for each of the categories. We have about 2 to 3 partners, and we've probably interviewed about 20 in each of those categories. So there's a lot that we just said, hey, now, not going to be a good match with us. And there's some that we even let go. So it's been an ongoing kind of passion project to just find the right people. And so far, the feedback has been good. So that's, and we always want to hear more feedback. So I'm glad to hear your feedback with Jose was good.
Yeah, I think what's cool about all people kind of in the optometry and optical and eye care field using some of these same financial resources is that company starts to get a knowledge base. Okay, what is eyewear? You know, hey, I bought an edger. Where do I place this on the P&L? You know, I have capital equipment, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one, because I know one of our other accountants, the one that he didn't use, Adam Roundy, he was just in the medical field beforehand. He was doing a lot of MD practices, and now he's doing a lot of OD practices. And we were talking, and he's going, yeah, what's this OCT thing? Yeah, that's a good write-off right there. You know, and just he's learning a lot about the space. And so now it's kind of become his specialty as well as Jose's. So it's kind of cool to see that evolution and just that knowledge base in optometry, because we need that. We need that specialization that helps out.
Yeah. What about loans? Let's say someone wants to open a practice. They need $350,000. What do you have for them?
Yeah. So that's an interesting one. So we tried to get into that space. We tried to find banks that were good at that, but a lot of them have regulations where they can't be on our website. So we can I can recommend the ones that I used, the banks that I've done business with, but yeah, we can't put that out in the public. Once again, it's just weird regulations. So a lot of them wanted to be on there, and they're like, hey, yeah, boss isn't allowing it. So
yeah. Okay. I think one of the services your group offers is it contract reviews?
Yeah, contract reviews.
Who does that in the group again?
So that's Dr. Chris Lopez, and he's always had a passion for just helping individuals get out in the workspace and get a good job. That's been his passion since he was in school, and he's wrote about it in various journals. So we brought him on about a year ago, and yeah, he's done consultations. I think he has like 10 this past week that he's done. So he's really getting a lot of business here, but you know, he does fantastic work. I mean, I kind of did a mock one with him when we first brought him on, and I was like, wow, the level of detail here, I didn't even know.
So what is he doing? Like, let's say optometrist gets a new job out of school, and is it so just making sure they're not getting screwed, they're getting the right pay?
Yeah, that's definitely a big one, is not getting screwed. And then also just looking at, you know, what benefits are you being offered? Is this retirement plan any good? Different things like that. Is your production bonus going to be any good? Are you going to even be able to obtain any of this production bonus? Different things like that. And he's restructured a lot of contracts so that, I remember one individual was making, I'm just going to throw numbers out here. They were making $120,000 a year, and they actually negotiated for $165,000. So they got a substantial boost just from, you know, working with them. And
is he fee-based?
He is. Yeah, it's just a standard fee that you pay, and you get an hour of his time. So yeah, he'll coach you what to say. He'll redo your resume, redo your contract for you. He'll redline everything.
I like it. It's just another set of eyes.
Exactly.
So, and it's
always good to just have a third party, you know, even like if you're going to buy or sell a practice, you always want someone to come in that's an outsider just to take a look, have another perspective. So,
yeah, you can be a know-it-all, or you can just, you know, shut up and take a little advice. That's how I see it. See, anything else that we can touch on for 5 or so minutes? that's kind of pressing, or anything new in the group you want to share? Any initiatives or?
Initiatives, yeah. We're constantly trying to produce CE content. So that's been our 2021. So we're having an event coming up in about 2 weeks, and that'll be actually for Raymond, it's a dry eye lecture, so it's your special.
I didn't get the invite yet, so
we're ironing out some final details, and we'll let you know it's coming out.
Do you have a date on it?
It's going to be, I believe, May 25th. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's when we're doing it. So,
are people bored with dry eye yet or not?
You know, actually, we're trying. So the spin on this one's going to be how to make dry eye a profitable revenue in your practice. So
right.
Yeah, obviously we have to put the finance spin on these things. So hopefully it'll be a little bit new and a little different than the other lectures.
Yeah.
And thousands of dry eye lectures. So.
All right, Aaron. So I'm on your website. I see something called a retirement/investment calculator. Mm-hmm. That's a cool tool. How should we use that?
Yeah. I mean, you just plug your numbers into that thing and it basically is telling you how much money you're going to have, you know, when you decide to retire. So I believe I'm on it right now. It's you put your current age in and then the age you plan to retire, and then you just plug in dollar amounts and you see, basically it's whatever you're comfortable with for retirement. That's what you're trying to get those dollar amounts to do. Yeah. It's a fantastic tool. We got one of our software engineers to write that up real quick, and it's just useful to have. I mean, and you can choose the other important thing on that is to choose the annual return rate. So I like to be conservative, put about 7-8% in there if you're just going to be boring and do index funds. But, you know, you can put different numbers in there. You can play around with it. But I think the biggest lesson you're going to learn from using this thing is that if the current age is lower when you start, that's just going to give you massive returns compared to if you start later on in life.
Right.
That's
the whole compounding thing. Okay. This applies for both of you, Dr. Brill and Neufeld. You both have real estate. And how did you come to that decision to buy something or build something? And what has it kind of done for your bank account?
Yeah, I mean, real estate, honestly, is, especially practice real estate, is a really big kind of builder for financial freedom. The reason I bought my building was that it came available. I mean, real estate around this area never comes available. We're in a very saturated area, can't build anymore. So everything's just kind of shooting up in the Bay Area. And the biggest thing is just the freedom from renting, because I was seeing practices around me in my area that, you know, after they go off their 3-year lease, their rent was being tripled. It was absolutely insane. And just to have that equity now and to have that ownership of the building, don't have to have that headache anymore. And the other thing is there's the whole tax advantage of, you know, owning your building, putting it in an LLC, having your practice corporation pay rent to the building and kind of paying off your mortgage that way. So just a lot of different aspects. And then, yeah, and then we've got a portion of it being rented out as well. So that's additional income. And then the building, since we bought it, I think I bought it 1.5 years ago, has gone up in value $200,000. So you get that just kind of appreciation over time as well. So a lot of different avenues of building wealth through that.
Right. So Dr. Brill, you have a building as well. How did you built the building? How did you decide real estate was the path?
Well, I didn't really know. I thought it would be a lot easier. And as with many things, if it's that easy, everybody would be doing it. So I needed more space. We were crowded out of space. We didn't have proper parking. And I looked at buying a lot. And I bought the lot, built a 20,000 square foot building with the idea that everybody else's rent would pay for my part of the note. And so that essentially I'd be kind of living there for free. Of course, you know, we didn't figure out that Sprint would fire half of its people and vacate 25% of all its properties. So, you know, there's unknowns in there, but eventually, like all things, it'll work out in the end. So the other thought process is something in terms of survivorship. So let's say that, depending on if you're a two-door state or a one-door state, you know, the two-door state, oftentimes I use the real estate as a proxy for an employment agreement. If something would happen to me, we'd still have the practice. And, you know, it could be used as rent. So, you know, I think that's a consideration too, as long as you have a separate LLC. But it's a long-term prospect, and I've been full for about the last 3 years, and it's kind of nice. I mean, so it doesn't work in one day. It's like all your other investments. If you're doing it over time, you'll always have it. So even if somebody else buys your practice, you want to keep the building unless it's more profitable to sell it. You just don't want to mess with it. But be prepared. You got a lot. There's things that go wrong with buildings. You know, I mean, you get big expenses, So, you know, you have to, it's not all, not all profit either. It's just not all profit. What do you think, Aaron? Is that right?
Oh yeah, you're definitely right. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of CapEx, a lot of maintenance that goes into owning a building.
Mainly maintenance. Yeah. Ownership is mainly maintenance.
Yeah.
And once your rooftop air conditioning unit goes out and they want $80,000 for it, I mean, you can't shop at Walmart for it, and commercial is commercial, and you get what you pay for. And, you know, they bring that big crane out and you're just gonna have to pay for it. So,
yeah. And that's an important part about real estate investing as well, is just having that money set aside. You know, don't just always have a little bit of cushion, just like we talked about the emergency fund for you as an individual. If you're going to own in real estate, it's the same thing. You got to have that cushion to help out with those expenses.
Right. So, you know, you're young, Dr. Neufeld. I mean, do you feel like you're stealing money from the practice to pay for the building, or?
The rent that we're charging the practice is the same amount of rent that we were paying initially. So
okay.
It's kind of a wash in that sense. And,
okay.
And there was actually some, the way that we had to buy the building, just it's kind of the California commercial real estate here. We basically charge the mortgage rate as rent to the practice. That was kind of a thing that was included in our mortgage. So, but it works out just fine.
Well, cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on here and just giving us some basics in financial education. And I think you're having an event on the 25th.
Yeah. We're having a CE event. Let me just make sure. And then also, yeah, you can jump on our website. We'll have that up soon. Yeah, it should be the 25th, 6 p.m. Pacific time. And also on, I'm not sure when this podcast is going to come out, but in 2 days, we're having a live event with some awesome industry influencers, including the host of this podcast. So be sure to jump on for that. I think it'll be a great discussion. We've got Dr. Ryan Gustis and then the Anagram guy as well. So I think
Steve, yeah. Steve's a good, cool guy. I like Steve.
Hell of a good conversation there.
This won't be out by then. We're recording this on the 9th, but I will put a link in the show notes for the recording.
Yeah, we'll put a recording out for that. So.
Right. Well, cool. So again, everybody, there's a link in the show notes to join the Odies on Finance Facebook group. And just a warning, the tone in the group is like super positive and uplifting, and it's cordial, it's joking. So it has its own personality, I would say.
Yeah, we want to keep that vibe because that's just how people feel comfortable talking about finances. If you're in a environment where everyone's trying to slash you down, no one's going to post anything. So it's open forum. Ask any question. There's an anonymous feature, so you don't have to put your name on anything. So we just want to keep it open so we can learn from each other and keep building each other up.
Right. Dr. Brill, any last financial advice?
I'd say try to make as much money as you can. So
don't have kids, maybe?
Yeah, a kid costs you about $250,000. So yeah, if you want to make more money, don't spend a lot of money and be conservative with how you save it. Be aggressive how you make it and pay yourself first. And just rejoice when you make a profit on there, and you know, just kind of see it grow over time. I mean, it's fun, but you got to be patient. It just doesn't happen right away. Nothing good happens just exactly right away.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, just that long-term trajectory. Invest early, invest often, and yeah, just be smart about things. And yeah, and that's one thing we didn't even talk about is make more money. I mean, if you have initial capital, then you can keep growing that and do that over time. It'll be perfectly fine. It'll be financial.
And the other thing I would say is that time goes by fast because you start out young, and you know, even when you see associates, everybody gets out of school at 26 or so. And you know, before you know it, they're 40 and they're thinking like, you know, the 26-year-olds are just like them. But a 26-year-old looks at a 40-year-old is like, you're old, you know? So it goes by fast. Take your time on it and be deliberate about it. Be deliberate.
Another thing I'll add is ask for help, message somebody, get personal advice, get those one-on-one conversations going, especially in the Odies on Finance group. I'm sure Aaron here will take a private message from you if you just need a quick tip. He's not a certified advisor. I don't think he is.
No, I am not, but I'm happy to talk, and I've got hundreds of PMs from people talking about it. And you know, that's how I started out too. I asked people. I didn't know what I was doing initially. I had a lot of good mentors that helped me out. So there's no shame in asking for help. Yeah.
Yep. It's that one executable action of just that first dollar you put in that will make the difference. So, Well, anyways, have a good Sunday, everybody, and go join the group. Link in the show notes. You'll have a good time.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
What up, iTrepreneurs? Hey, all of our practices, we love 5-star Google reviews. I'll tell you what, I like 5-star podcast reviews on Apple Podcasts. Please head over there, drop a 5-star review if you love us, a 1-star if you think I should take a hike to Mexico and get a margarita. But seriously, this helps other people find the podcast and read about it and listen it and get some insider business tips. Thank you.
This brings us to the end of another episode of iTrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Oz. Go ahead and click over to our website, iTrepreneur.com, or head over to Facebook to join our special Facebook group, iTrepreneur. See you there.